You're listening to Wine on the Vine with Lisa Mayaka, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to Thursday. We're just T plus. We're T plus eight after the hour. Technical issues. I feel like there's like this universal pull that just wants us to go with the flow. And so today's flow has us a little past the hour, but no worries, no worries, no worries, no worries. I am Lisa Mayaka, your host for the next 52 minutes of shameless storytelling, host of Wine on the Vine. And before I bring our guest to the table, I wanted to just thank all of you who commented in a plethora of ways on last week's show, where I had the Reverend Dr. Cornelius May give his story. And I am so gratified by those responses. My hope, my desire, the whole reason this show exists is that while you may not know the names of the storytellers, you will find yourself somewhere in their stories. And as you do, you will free yourself to tell your own story. And so here we are again. This week, ironically, my theme is when a life prepared for us adds up to something entirely other. And not only did this week's scheduled guests need to reschedule, but we've just had some phenomenal technical difficulties that we're just rolling with. So it's going to be great. I have learned in my few decades of existence that when things don't go as you've planned and prepared, if you take a deep breath and open up your hands and your arms and welcome whatever's next, sometimes it's the most glorious experience of one's life. And my hope is that that's what unfolds today. My belief is that's the case. So what I have for you today is, she didn't give me a bio. And when I advertised her on social media, I put it out there a couple of days ago because this was kind of a last minute deal. I had asked her if she'd appear for me in April or May. And what she said was, I can do it Thursday. And I'm like, well, I already have someone booked for Thursday. And then that booking fell through. And so here we are. This is just meant to be. But I said something along the lines of, you know, what story do you want to tell? And then I said, well, I usually prep with my guests a little bit. And so on my drive home from a little bit of R&R yesterday, I was in the hills of Saratoga and Santa Cruz and Paso Robles. And so we tried three iterations of connection on the phone. All of them were epic fail. And so was our technical connection today. So this show is just going to be the best because there's no like, you know, prescribed, pre-recorded, pre-practiced anything. But here's what I know to be true about this woman. She is not supposed to be here today. There was someone else scheduled, but in a bigger, broader scope, she's not supposed to be here today. I think doctors gave her maybe to her 20s. I don't know all of that part of her story. I know she was never supposed to reproduce and have children, and she has two remarkably amazing sons. She is not supposed to be here in this vein telling us this story today because she had an illness and blah, blah, blah. She also had been set up to achieve something along the lines of mathematical teaching, and now she's an artist. And that's the story I think we're going to hear today. But when I asked for a biography, she sent me instead a blog that somebody had written about her when she did a show a couple of years ago. And she's from Berlin, Ohio. That's a place. And in the introduction to that bio or to that blog, there were three quotes from some of our profound scientists, mathematical geniuses that have gone before. And this is one thing that Amy and I have in common. We both love math. I spent this morning in statistics because that's what I love. And so I have to reiterate what I've tweeted out this week. I don't know if any of you follow my tweets, but I quoted Galileo. Mathematics is the language with which God wrote the universe. Pythagoras, geometry is the knowledge of the eternally existent. And Euripides, mighty is geometry, joined with art, resistless. My friends, let me introduce to you one of the most humblest, gifted human beings on the planet who understands geometry like none other and has transformed that understanding into an artistic form that I honor and worship. And I bring to you today, Miss Amy Lynn Schlabaugh. Is technology working?
I think so.
Hi. Hi, Amy. And so I also know Amy because for 25 years or so, yeah, she has been dear friends and card club subscriber to two of my sisters. I have six sisters, but the next two after me, and she and her sister have been like their best friends. And so I don't know you like they do. I know you from afar, but I also know, I know you to be one of the most authentic, honest, vulnerable human beings on the planet.
Oh my word, you're so sweet.
I'm honored to have you today. And it's just completely like par for the course that we would have technical issues.
Oh my gosh, it's been crazy. Such a rigmarole.
So, but you're here.
Yes. That was a little stressful for a while. Sorry about that.
And I know you were already nervous about the whole live format of the show. So do we need to do like box breathing?
No, yoga? I'm going to be okay.
Okay. Okay. Well, welcome to Los Angeles.
Well, thank you. Never been to, no, that's true. That's not true. I was in LA when I was little, but.
Really? Do you remember?
It was on a trip. I shouldn't say little. I was freshman in high school. My dad, our whole family took a trip out west. He had different business meetings. And so we took a couple weeks. Actually, I got sick. It was supposed to be a 4-week trip. We got all the way to California. We were in LA. And then we had a beeline back because I got sick. So I ruined the vacation for everybody. The first 2 weeks were wonderful.
Well, I'm certain on reflection, nobody would imagine that you had ruined it, but.
No, we had a great time.
Is that part of the story you're going to tell today?
No.
Okay. I'm like a little girl. I'm sitting on the edge of my seat. I can't wait to hear what you bring us today.
Well, you know, I made a post last week on Instagram. I thought maybe that's what prompted you
talking
with me.
It is.
But I brought up this painting. Whoops. You probably can't see it. And I know on the radio.
The top one?
Yeah, the top one.
Uh-huh.
But I brought it up from my basement because I kind of gave my bedroom a refresh. And it got me thinking. I painted that when I was in high school. I was 16 years old. And it just got me thinking about sometimes dreams don't come true. And I made a post, you know, put the picture and said, you know, I was 16 when I painted that and I dreamed of going to art school, but sometimes dreams don't come true. And so my story really starts out that way. But
why didn't you go to art school?
Okay, well, you already brought up my health. It's basically because of my health. My dad was worried that I would become a starving artist with no health insurance. Which I understand, totally understand. And he strongly encouraged me not to, and I honored that, and I went into math. But yeah.
Have any affinity for math?
Well, I did. I was good at math. I liked math. I can't say I loved math. For some reason, I didn't want to teach art. And I thought I'd go into education. I didn't want to get my degree in education. I wanted to get it in a subject. So I thought I'd teach high school math. I enjoyed it. I was good at it. And then I thought,
and your dad said, do this for some form of stability, because why? Your health was precarious and he knew you needed.
Oh yeah. You kind of indicated that I'm not supposed to be here. Well, and this is kind of the beginning of my love for art. Back when I was 9, I was diagnosed with a very rare lung disease, and it was unheard of in young kids. And so my parents didn't know what to expect. Actually, the doctors told them I probably wouldn't survive a year. And then obviously I did. But what happens is about every other year, a little more, every 2 to 3 years, I'd be hospitalized for 2 months. And so my medications were a rigmarole. I've used that word too much.
There's no such thing as too much. It's all good. It's your story. You tell it how you want to.
Yeah. So I'd be hospitalized for a couple months every other year, every 2 to 3 years. And then I just needed that kind of health care, you know. And so my dad, we had experience with, you know, he knew a young man who got his art degree and couldn't do anything with it. And so it just kind of jaded him. And he just really concerned that wanted me to be able to take care of myself and strongly discouraged me from art school. And I honored that. And I'm so glad I did, because even though that dream to go to art school, you know, was crushed, the route I took is so much better. I could never have orchestrated how God took two of my passions, put them together, and gave me a specific niche that can, like I've had a couple solo shows and galleries. And I think a big part of that is how God orchestrated the mathematics and the art and my certain technique together because of the path I took. And I really believe honoring my father was honoring God. And so if I would have had my own way and gone to art school, I wouldn't be where I am. I wouldn't have met my husband. I wouldn't have my two wonderful children. And this particular style of art that I do. But
so you just said so much. I'm like, I have so many follow-up questions. Like, you know, we all have daddy issues. And I think a lot of them stem from this, like, dad says do this. And I think sometimes we girls, feminists as we are, right, we're like, we're raised in a very different era than our parents, so we're like,
yeah,
I can do whatever I want. And yet their perspective comes across as some form of directive. Mm-hmm. But where they're really coming from is I love you and I want you to be able to take care of yourself. And it sounds to me like that was maybe where your dad might have been coming from.
For sure. It was definitely for my own good that he was worried about that.
Did you know that at the time?
Go ahead. Oh, did you know? It was frustrating to me. And even afterwards, you know, even after I graduated years later, people would ask, you know, are you bitter about that? And honestly, no way. It's just it's so clear that this was the path God had for me. And my dad was the catalyst to that happening.
So you've mentioned God a few times. Who is God to you?
Oh, God, creator of the world, creator, you know, creator of heaven and earth. And I also believe I'm a Christian, and I believe God revealed himself through Jesus. And that's where my faith is in Jesus.
And so I'm going to ask one more question and then just sit back and let you tell the story.
Okay.
But I mentioned a few quotes at the beginning from some mathematicians that have gone before us and have informed the path of your study. And they too would not maybe say it the way you just said it, but in math, they have found a belief system or found evidence of or seen some order to the universe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That had them say these things.
Yes.
Geometry and other mathematical things. And you're just smiling and leaning in. So I want to hear how that informed your path to where you are now.
Right. Well, they saw that math was the language of God. And I use those three quotes in my shows. You know, I've had a couple solar shows, and I am hoping to have one in the future. And I will always use those quotes because I just think they're so powerful. Well, okay, let me go back to when I started going into math. You asked if I loved math. Honestly, back then, I didn't love it. I was good at it. I liked it. And I thought that's what I could teach. And I thought teaching great health insurance, I could have the same schedule with my children. It just seemed perfect. So when I went into math, I have not loved applied mathematics, but to get my degree, I had to take calc, you know, college calc 1, 2, and 3. I did okay in all those, but where I thrived and where I fell in love with math was when I took some abstract classes like non-Euclidean geometry. Non-Euclidean geometry blew my mind. As a math major, you know, a lot of people in my...
my listeners are all now Googling, and they probably need to spell what that is.
Well, what was cool is I didn't declare myself a math major until at the end of my sophomore year. So my school only offered upper-level math classes every other year, which means every 4 semesters. So I had to go to the president and get special permission to take 21 credit hours. And then I had to take a few of the math classes out of sequence. So I was really at a disadvantage. Plus, often people with math degrees or pursuing math degrees are brilliant. I'm not brilliant, but I just really enjoyed math. And I, you know what, when I asked, my dad's an engineer. So in high school, when I'd ask him to help me with the problem, I really tried to avoid it because then he'd end up sitting with me for over an hour explaining to me the rest of the chapter. So I was always ahead of the teacher. I could help my friends. Usually didn't get as good of grades as some of the friends I helped because I'm always making mistakes. But I enjoyed it and I was good at it. So when I went into this class, it rocked my world for different reasons. One, you throw everything you learned in high school out the window. Euclidean geometry is basically what we learn in high school. It's geometry on a plane. And all the theorems we learned were Euclid's theorems. And so you forget all that. And then non-Euclidean, you take the fifth postulate, which is the parallel postulate. And then you work that or change that. And out of that, if you just change that one postulate, I contemplated going into detail here, but I decided not to. But
I would love that, it, but I don't know if anyone else would.
If you twist that postulate, if you change that postulate,
yeah,
all kinds of geometries fall out of that. And they're called non-Euclidean geometries, like parallel lines could curve away from each other. Like parallel lines, they might have the same
intersection.
If they go across a perpendicular line, we know in Euclidean geometry, it's going to form right angles, you know, 90 degrees across a parallel line. And then, you know, I mean, across the perpendicular line, then, you know, they're going to continue on equidistant.
Right.
But in some, you know, different non-Euclidean geometries, you have the two lines, they cross the line perpendicularly, so they're at right angles, but they can curve away from each other, or they can curve to each other.
Oh,
they can do all sorts of crazy
divergent, things. Convergent,
and then angles of a triangle, the internal angles will add up to more than 180 degrees, or just different things. So in this class, it was all proofs, which I love, and some of these brilliant mathematicians were floundering because it was all proofs, and that's my jam. So I love this class; it put us all on a level playing field, and I could just write proofs. I fell in love with proofs in junior high at Heritage Christian. I had a teacher.
We went there together, but we do have that in common.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
The best math teacher in junior high. He taught us some.
Oh, I didn't get there until high school.
He retired like right after I had him. It was Mr. Hunts. And he taught us, oh my goodness, it was so fun. He would say, he taught us reasoning skills, really, if-then statements. You know, if this is true, then this is true. Or false, you know, false reasoning compared to, you know, following good reasoning and then the proofs. And I just loved the proofs. I loved my little notebook. He had us define all these things and give us truths. Like, you can't define everything. You got to start with something.
Oh, I'm totally geeking out right now. This is the best conversation I've had in weeks. It's wonderful.
Like, if you start with a
point. If then, so critical thinking at a really kind of base but complicated level, like, right? Yeah. Because, yeah. Right? But it informs everything.
Mm-hmm. And this, I'll jump up to the non-Euclidean in a minute, but I just remember going to high school and then being surprised that in all these classes, especially geometry, which I loved in elementary and junior high, they would just give us the proofs.
Right.
We would memorize it,
right.
Regurgitate it on the test. Yep. It was just memorizing.
Yes.
We didn't have to use critical thinking to prove things. So this class, I have papers of just proofs, and I excelled at it. But anyways, what I thought was really cool and what left me in awe of God and just more in love with God, these non-Euclidean geometries, these mathematicians over 200 years ago were discovering these. And in mathematics, there's a debate. Do you discover math or do you create math? And I absolutely believe you discover it. And it's what those mathematicians you quoted are saying. You know, it is there. God has put that there and we're discovering it. But anyways, over 200 years ago, these mathematicians were discovering these non-Euclidean geometries. And it was a big debate in the math field, which is so interesting to think of mathematicians like arguing and debating and
being kind of snippy
with each other.
Right.
And those things happen.
I mean, like politically and theologically and in all these other realms, we can kind of imagine it because the opposing views seem rather obvious. But right. In mathematics, it's like, what are you going to pick sides? Is there a gunfight at the
end?
And
they did.
Yeah,
somebody thought these geometries were nonsensical, didn't make sense. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. They're just changing the parallel postulate and saying, if this is true, then this is true, then this is true. And what?
I got to hit time out. What's geometry?
What's geometry?
I know what geometry is, but I don't know that all of our listeners even care or remember 10th grade.
Actually, you kind of stumped me. This is embarrassing. I have the math and I can't quite.
But we know what algebra, right? Algebra is are the equations that mm-hmm. mathematically add, subtract, divide, and otherwise.
You can figure out a value.
Right. But geometry, where I want to go with this with you, it's pictorial, right? We can see geometry, right?
That's what you're saying.
It's the angles.
Right. You have a plane and we're studying surfaces, like you lines, points, triangles. But the definition of geometry, I'm not quite sure. I'm gonna look that up as soon as
but I think it stimulated your brain in a visual way where art had already, right? Does that feel right?
Yeah.
Because something jacked you up
I'll get to that. I'll get to that in a second. But let me finish the non-Euclidean thing.
Got it.
There's something there that inspired me. The idea that these mathematicians 200 years ago had no application for this math they discovered. No application. 200 years later, when we go super big into the cosmos or super small into quantum physics, Euclidean geometry does not apply. You need these geometries that those mathematicians discovered 200 years ago. So for me, I'm like, okay, it's there. God put it there. And there's use. You know, we didn't know the uses back then. It was before Einstein's theory of relativity, you know, and time is fourth dimension and all these different things that fall. Now we need those mathematics for what's going on now. I just think that just leaves me in awe of God. And so how the math has affected my art. So I taught. And then I
you taught math at what level?
High school, algebra. usually algebra. I taught algebra summer school at Glen Oak and was a sub at Hoover. And then here in our town, I taught algebra 1 and algebra 2 out at Highland. But anyway, so I retired from that at age 28 to have my babies and stay home with my boys. And because of health, you know, it was just important for me to be home and to be energetic with them, and I wasn't able to teach.
Can you say them. This so matter of factly, but you were never supposed to be able to have children.
Oh, right.
You were never supposed to survive past 10 years old.
Yeah.
You were never supposed to. I mean, I see the oxygen.
Yeah.
Right?
And it's such a blessing, actually. It's really given me a new, I got to the point where I couldn't work out or I couldn't, there's a lot I couldn't do. And now that I have this and it's portable, I have a long tube here at home, so I can go all over the house. But if I need to go out, and really, I don't need it as much when I'm sedentary. It's when I work out or when I sleep. But I've got a little pack, and so it's made me very mobile. And yeah, there's no sadness about this. I feel like it's a blessing. I'm happy about it.
Well, you were
But
never supposed to work out either.
oh, right, I cheered in college. Like my doctors did not expect. I remember, okay, here, I wasn't going to talk about this, but I remember my doctor asking me when I was cheering to come in. Okay, when I was first diagnosed when I was 9, there was a conference of all the top pulmonologists in the country. Just so happened to be at Rainbow Children's Hospital when I had my issue. And they did not know this was so unique and unheard of in a kid and a healthy kid. Older people would die of it and it was fatal, but a healthy kid have it. It's just they didn't know of it happening before. Later, they did find a kid in Canada. But
So
anyways,
it's
these
you and
doctors,
there's a kid in Canada.
yeah, at that time, and there was no internet. They had to call around the world to see if anybody, yeah. So anyway, so when that happened, it just so happened the top brains of pulmonology were gathered at my hospital, and they picked their brains on what to do, and they put me on this medicine. It takes 8 weeks to take it. Five doctors have to sign that it's necessary. All these kind of things. I have to be hooked up to heart monitors when I take it. The bag's covered, and they put, there's so many. That's there's too much about that. But the cool thing is these doctors. They meet different places, but every 6 years it's back at my hospital. So the next time they came, they couldn't believe I was still alive. The next time they came, so it would have been 12 years, nine. Yeah, I think there was a time in between. So when they came, when I was cheering in college, my doctor asked if I would come make an appearance. And so he was in charge of this particular one. And there was an auditorium full of doctors. And he asked me to do something, and I'm like, I would only do this for you, Dr. Stern. Because actually, at the time, I was dating another doctor that was in there, a young doctor, and I was like, so embarrassed to do this. But Dr. Stern, he threw up on this big, screen, an auditorium, my lungs, and my lungs look terrible. So he threw up my lungs, and he's like, what do you do with a patient? Like, how do you treat a patient whose lungs look like this, but who functions like this? And that was my cue to throw open the doors and run down the aisle. Now he wanted me to do that handspring back tuck, all these kind of gymnastics. And I'm like, I don't cheer for Cleveland State. I cheer for Malone College. I will do round off toe touch now. So I ran down the aisle, kind of mortified, did the round off toe touch bow, and the whole auditorium left to their feet and clapped and wanted to talk to me afterwards. But that's how my bad my lungs look. So anyways, when I had Charlie, when I had my firstborn, a person from me, I'm sorry, I'm out of breath now from
NeoCon,
the
Ohio College of Medicine.
What's that?
Is Northeastern Ohio College of Medicine still your, I know they've changed their name, but is that still your hospital? That
Rainbow
over,
Babies and
oh,
Children's.
Rainbow
Part of
Babies
University
in
Hospital.
Cleveland. Yeah. I
Yeah,
live
this is
right
Northeast
down the road
Ohio.
in Little Italy. Yes.
I
Okay.
go there every other week because I go up to the Cleveland Clinic now for shots every other week, and I go to Little Italy and have pasta and pastries every other
As you
week.
should. There's no better place for that. So every 2 weeks to this day.
Yeah, I mean, I just switched to Cleveland Clinic a year and a half ago, and I've been getting really great care, and I'm kind of up the ante as far as taking care of myself. And part of that is going up to get three shots every other week. It's kind of, it's just something we're trying to see if it'll help. So, yeah.
So somewhere along life's way, after you got this degree that your dad said you ought to get, and you tried it on teaching, and you retired at 28, and you had your boys, which you weren't supposed to have, but you still had this yearning, and I'm sure dabbling in art, because I know you were drawing.
No, I actually laid down my
No?
brushes when I was 17,
What?
and I can't think of a painting. I was just thinking that earlier today. It was about 20 years later. I picked it up when my boys entered junior high, was trying to think, did I ever paint
Wait,
between
wait,
those
wait, wait.
videos?
Okay, so the piece over your shoulder you did at 16.
Yes.
And from whatever. From 17 until your child entered junior high.
Yeah, I was almost 40, I think, and I just picked up my brushes again. Now, I can't promise there was ever a time I've really, really thought, have I ever painted in between? I don't think I have. But so I picked up my brushes, and then here I, because of the miracle in my life, God has made himself so evident to me. I want to use my gifts and art to glorify him, but I've never had a desire to paint, you know, sheep and a shepherd or the cross or the empty tomb or Bible stories. You know, I've just never had a desire for that kind of
Okay,
painting.
and let's clarify, because you were raised in a Christian faith, and so these are the sights and stories and meaningful sacramental pictures that speak to you of your faith. But you have,
Right, for sure.
right, okay, so, but you do credit God and your faith with keeping you, sustaining you, healing you and getting you to this space. Okay, but now you're like looking at what you want to do artistically and saying, I see it through another lens.
Right. Two things. I wanted to do something. I've always felt like I needed to do my gifts and talents to give. There's a quote by Irma Bombeck, and she says, like, when I, oh, I wanted to, I have it written down. Oh, when I stand before God at the end of my life, I want to have no talent left. I want to be able to say I used it all.
I used them
You
all.
know, yeah.
We're
And
exhausted.
so I want that to be true in my life. So I'm thinking I
Wow.
don't have this drive to paint like that way or draw that way, but I've always wanted to do abstracts. Like, large, I shouldn't say always. At that time, I wanted to do large abstracts. But for me, I know a lot of artists pour out their, you know, their feelings or use it as, you know, art as an outlet. I've never felt that way. But I wanted to do art abstracts, and so I know a lot of artists also will paint certain things to evoke emotions in the viewer. And I just didn't do that either. And I was just, when I was thinking of the large, you know, the abstracts, it just clicked to me that I like looking at an abstract painting or something. It clicks with me, and I think this is the way it is with everybody because of the shape or the color or the movement or, you know, the flow. There's just different things that can we connect with or that we like about a painting. And to me, it's so cool to connect with it. And the painting does bring up feelings in yourself. And I think this would be true about anybody. And then for me, maybe it's just the nerd me, but I would think, maybe I'm wrong, but I think it's cool. Everybody would find it cool that you find out, oh, there's a meaning behind it besides it being pretty and moving you aesthetically. You know, to find out, like, you might look at something and you think, ooh, I love those waves or I love the color. And then you find out it's a cosine curve, you know, in mathematics. Or you find out it's a visual representation of Pythagoras' theorem or whatever. And I know even if you're not into math, I think you could look at that painting and it's you see such beauty. I think I like the math paintings and I love the harsh lines mixed with the organic curves. You know, you have curves and shapes, but then also over lines. I just love that mix. And
So,
so,
and have you fallen in love with any of people that have gone before you? Have you patterned any of your style or painting? Have you seen this in anyone before?
there's different mathematical artists that bring math into it, but not this style and not. No, I haven't seen it before. I do know people use, like, my particular spot style is I'll mask off certain areas, paint certain things, then rip up the tape, and then I try to get crisp, clean lines between my colors, and the brush strokes are going different directions. So when they come to the crisp line, you see strokes going one way and then the other. And I did see a painting like that once, and I just was mesmerized by it. I tried to figure out how the artist did it. I just kind of studied it. And I honestly haven't seen it anywhere else. I'm sure other artists do it. But I kind of honed in and tried to, you know, through experimenting and a process of just getting better, I kind of honed in and got it to, Yeah, develop that
Have you
style.
formally studied art?
Nope, I just had an excellent high school teacher, Mr. Palmer. And yeah, so,
So,
but
say, yeah, say more. Say more about that.
so this process, what I ended up doing is some of my paintings had math themes, but then I also ended up I did some a pair for the front of our church in the same style, depicting it was called Peace. Peace I give unto you, not as the world gives. And it was, from that verse. And so I had other touches.
Biblical quote.
What's that?
That's a biblical quote, correct?
Yes, sorry.
That Jesus said. Okay.
And then other churches, another church asked, and I did one for another church. So then I started, like, there's certain scriptures out of the Bible that I would, the verse I would just depict, not necessarily abstractly depict in the paintings. And what I kind of, my goal with the paintings is that you look at it, like I said, there's just something that connects with you aesthetically, with, like I said, with the shapes and the balance and the movement. But then you don't really see things in it until you really look. Things will pop out or things, it's very subtle. This one isn't a math painting, but here's how I would describe. I did a painting for my boys. They love basketball. So it was a basketball painting, but you looked from the top, you saw the court. And the basketball court, you've got those graceful curves, but you also have the harsh lines. And so it was a geometric looking painting, but you looked down through the basketball. So you saw the curves of the basketball. And it just, my humble opinion, I thought it was beautiful. But you don't know it's a basketball court. Typically, that's what you're told. Some people would see it. And so I took it in the very beginning. I was really sheepish. I didn't have anything in a gallery yet. And I just carried my painting to this gallery, a couple, and just asked, is this something you'd be interested to have here? And the curator was so flattering. I mean, I was so scared, and he just made me feel great. And he called another person over, and they were just oohing and aahing over it, talking about all the things. I didn't go to school, but I guess there's a book that I need to read about. Oh, what is it?
How
I
does
did a gallery show with one
that
curator, and she's like, "You've never read that book?" And I'm like, "No, it should be before the film." But she said, "Your paintings do it. The balance and the movement and all the things. My paintings do it, I guess, just naturally." So, anyways, these guys were going on about the painting, and I said, "Well, do you know what it is?" And they're like, "Well, it looks celestial, planetarial," and talked about the planets and just the different things about it and the movement. And I'm like, but what do you think it is? And they're like, what do you mean? And I said, it's a basketball court. You look through the basketball into the basketball court, and they're like, and the one had tattoos. You could tell he was like, not into sports at all. And he's like, oh, a bloody bat. He studied in Europe, a bloody basketball court. But that's what I kind of like. You look at it, you see the shapes, you love it, and you don't really know what it is until you
So,
really think about it.
what is the one that I posted with the tree?
Oh, okay. Now those ones, that would be an interpretation of a scripture. And
Okay.
in the end of Revelation, the conclusion of the Bible, this is like a weird thing. It talks about the tree of life being planted. You get the image of both sides of a river, and that there's a river of life that comes from the throne of God. And the tree, the leaves of the tree of life are for the healing of the nations. And I love that. The tree of life is in Genesis, the beginning of the Bible, and right at the very end. It's like bookends to a plan of redemption, a beautiful
So
plan of
you
redemption.
painted it with gold leaves.
There's gold, it's 24 karat gold. Gold leaf on the edges of the leaves, and the leaves were for the healing of the nation. I just love that. But it's the tree of life. It's always puzzled me, the tree of life with the river on both sides of the river. So that's how I painted it. So those paintings where I just take a scripture and just kind of represent it abstractly, those might not be as subtle as the other ones. Anyway, so that's what it's from that verse.
And your paintings have now, well, they're there, and you still do some painting, but you've morphed into some drawings. some.
Yes. Okay.
How does a mathematician without any of this training do this?
Do you just, well, I think my natural proclivity.
Night have a vision and go, yeah, I'm drawing that today.
Well, the pointillism or the stipple work, I've been calling these pointillisms for 35 years. I'm so embarrassed. My high school teacher called this pointillism, where you use dots, you know, to create an image. It's just dots with an ink pen, but it's actually
pointillism.
It's actually stipple work. I just had it pointed out to me this year, so I have to get used to saying it. I do stipple pieces, not pointillism. Pointillism is when you use colors, like an artist would use points of color, paint, to not only create different hues, but you back up and there's an impression of something else, or an impression of a different color, because the points are different colors. What I do is black ink. I mean, you'll see, a lot of people call it pointillism. Tattoo artists will call it pointillism, but it's technically stipple work.
Okay.
Anyways.
Oh my goodness. This conversation needs to continue. How content are you with your existence?
Oh, I love it. I have a great quality of life. I'm not afraid to die, but I'm just enjoying life. Very, very content. Love my existence. Like I said, I look forward to, I believe as a Christian, you know, that when I die, I'll be in heaven with God. I look forward to that. But I love life on here, on earth here too. But I've never been afraid to die. When I was 9, my parents, we prayed for a miracle, and we do believe that God can heal somebody 100%. He's capable of that. But I also, in my case, the miracle was he let me live on with this disease way longer than I was supposed to. And like, even now, I had a doctor see my lungs, not my regular doctor. He was out of the country, but another doctor. And he, you know, needed an x-ray. And he walked into the room and he saw the x-ray and he said, "Holy shit." So they look a mess. I shouldn't be functioning as well as I do. I lost track of what I was saying. I kind of diverged into.
This is the good shit. This is the good shit. You had me on the shit. Right? Like, the bottom line is, I can't say it for you. What I heard you say was your contentment rests in some form of knowing that there is an afterlife for you and you have not lived this life on your own terms. At some point in your life, you surrendered those terms to whatever the universe might open for you. And that, to me, I wish we could have had the third screen so that while we were talking, I could show the audience that's watching on Facebook Live or will watch it this week all of your art that we're talking about. I think I'm going to put some pieces of that on my site, because it's not the norm. It's not usual. It's just, it's beyond the scope. It's extremely gifted, Amy. And at any point, had you bowed to anything other than the divine, right? Your show that I started this with the quotes, it was called math.logos.music. Is that right?
Yeah, math logos music.
And these are
evidence of the divine.
Evidence of the divine. This is the last one in the world for you.
Yeah, and if the next show was titled Thumbprint, Mathematics, Evidence of the Divine, and my next show, if I get to do it, is going to be called Signature. There's so many things I planned on talking about that we don't have time for. But that one, Signature, Mathematics, Evidence of the Divine. So you see a theme here, Mathematics and Evidence of the Divine. And I specifically use that word divine. I do not want to be known as a Christian artist. I want to be known as an artist who's a Christian. And so when I have my gallery shows, I want everybody to feel welcome, to want to come, to want to view it. And if I was known as a Christian artist and only did that kind of work, I would never want somebody to think, I don't want to go to that. It's a Christian thing. I want anybody of any religion or non-religions, atheists, agnostics, Wiccans, Buddhists, whatever you decide. I want anybody to be interested to come to my gallery shows. So I use divine because mathematics is evidence of the divine. And then I narrow it down, like the next one, signature. I got inspired by Signature in the Cell, which Stephen Myers wrote the book, DNA is God's, not God, he says intelligence design. Yeah. DNA is evidence that there's intelligence and purpose creating the world, you know, because in DNA we have code, and whenever there's a code, there's a code giver. And code is language. So whenever you have language, there's a language giver. And then that gets into my Christianity again. Love us. You know, God's spoken word.
That's who you are. I want one word comes to me when I look at you and when I look at your work and when I look at your art, and it is beauty.
Oh.
And I think a long life journey, those of us who are either seeking or not seeking the divine, we sometimes miss beauty.
Yeah.
And the beauty is comprised, I believe, of all of these things. But yeah. I mean, you sitting here telling me this story is one of the most beautiful gifts in my life, let alone this day. Unfortunately, we're going to have to kick it back to the studio in a minute, but would you be willing to come back? And I think the next show we need to do is out here on the West Coast.
Oh, wait, say that again?
Like, I think you need to bring your pieces to the West Coast. I think we need to see what it is you're producing.
Yeah, that's something I guess I'd consider. That would stretch me. You're meaning to come out myself with art.
Well, you offered to us today a story of selflessness and humility. And there, I can't speak from that position. I've been a selfish bitch most of my life and have little to show for it. I think when you do what you've done in your submission, and whether it was the disease that brought you there or your early faith or your respect for your father or whatever it was that compelled you to be so vulnerable and open and just say, okay, well, whatever comes, I'll make that work too. And look at who you are. It's
just Lisa.
So beautiful. I'm honored to have you here today, Amy.
Aww. Well, thank you, Lisa,
for your story.
Oh. Well, there's things I wanted to say I didn't get to.
I know. So yeah, and we had technical issues. We put us both in a position of like, let's make this work. So so now, can I ask you to look at your calendar for April or May?
Absolutely, because I like to finish talking about the art part at the end. Good. I had some things I wanted to say and I didn't get a chance to.
Good. All right, we're bringing her back, guys. We're going to bring her back. Yes, and next week I have a very special, it's been pre-recorded. I'm calling it April, We Ain't Nobody's Fools. I visited my dear friend of 30 years in Santa Cruz, California, the last few days, and we recorded a girlfriend show and we flipped the script. She interviewed me. So that'll be next week. Take care, everyone.
You're listening to Wine on the Vine with Lisa Mayaka, only on LA Talk Radio.